By the year 4039, Earth was a scarred and desolate battlefield. Hordes of armored robots created by man in the previous century were sweeping the planet, brutally destroying everything in their path and threatening mankind with extinction. One city attempted to escape their onslaught by unraveling the secrets of time and traveling back in a desperate search for a safer age. They succeeded, and time was their friend, until the arrival yet again of their relentless enemy.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and this week it is me and Trish Coughlin.
Yes, it is. It's us.
Happy New Year to everybody. Hopefully you enjoyed Cult Movie Trailer A-Go-Go a couple of weeks ago. And now we're getting into Season 10. Can you believe it? Season 10.
Oh, Season 10. This podcast has lasted longer than most marriages.
That's right. Marriages, all my relationships.
Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
And we continue doing this for you guys into season 10, but there will be a change this season, but I'm going to wait for that announcement till the end of the episode. Hopefully it goes over okay. But
we'll find out.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to be changing our schedule a little bit, and we'll make that announcement at the end of this episode. But this week we're going to be talking about The Time Guardian from 1987, an Australian sci-fi picture. Think Starship Troopers, like these elite soldiers sent back in time to do excavation. Oh, yeah.
It's Terminator Construction.
Like, I don't understand this point in this movie. Like, you sent this guy. You don't send the construction team. You send a soldier back in time.
Yeah.
And apparently they've been here before, because some of the people in 1986 are aware, and he's prepping for this city that's jumping back in time in...
Yeah.
It's the last city of remaining humans, or at least they think they are. There's still a bunch of cyborgs that are trying to raid their city and seem to also be able to travel through time. Does make me wonder why they
decide what's left of humans.
Yeah. Which is weird, because they are human themselves, kind of, sort of, maybe.
I know.
I like the idea. I have an idea that maybe they're just, it's AI built cyborgs using humanity as kind of this husk to move around.
Yeah. And I also had kind of the idea is they maybe don't need the humans, because you can kind of sort of now 3D print organs. So I think maybe that technology exists, which we could introduce.
That is a very interesting idea. Definitely something we can consider, because I'm not sure. Like, I like the idea of this city bouncing through time, but
yes,
once he gets back in time, not much happens. Intimidates the townsfolk. He intimidates the construction guy to give him a big backhoe, earth mover, I guess, as they call it in Australia.
Well, and they had a...
Nothing says
the cops are like these weird, corrupt, like, roadhouse cops.
Yeah, right? Well, the one guy who thinks he runs the town is just like a deputy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I get it. It's to keep it low budget. Nothing says cheap sci-fi more than a rock quarry.
Yeah.
We could probably rattle off titles left, right, and center about movies taking place in a quarry.
I know. You can probably rattle off movies where the set piece is in a couple of quarries, but that's about it. Or a race, but not the whole movie.
No. No. This is lacking in action. You got a fairly decent opening bit. These soldiers from the city fighting these Jendiki, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of what that meant. It was spelt way differently than I thought, but I was trying to think of like a combination of words like Jean something. I'm not sure what the Diki part would be. Australians have weird things.
That's where I thought it came from. I thought they'd come upon them like way back when they were first in Australia, and the Australians kind of introduced them to the term Jendiki, and they took it with them through time.
Oh,
with no other reference.
Very good. I like that. Yeah, you spent time in Australia, didn't
you? Yeah, I did. There's so many fun names. Uluru, Taronga. There's some really cool names of stuff down there. There's lots of vowels. It's fun to say. A lot of Australian stuff is damn fun to say.
Well, yeah, I like the idea that it might be an Aboriginal term used, and they've come across the city before, and they've come across these things before.
Yeah.
I mean, given the way the movie ends, I was wondering why they went through all the effort for the city to stick around for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I thought they were looking for a home. And considering they kind of defeated the bad guys, why were they in such a hurry to leave?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not
I don't know.
It's not like the future had anything to offer them. So staying put probably was a much better plan.
True. Well, I wonder if it wasn't, and this is something maybe we could introduce as well, as you have kind of the Aboriginal peoples who are very like in tune with nature, in tune with the earth, and they're kind of like, you don't belong in this time. It'll put everything off balance. So it's sort of an understanding between the two, is once things are okay, they'll go to a spot in time and be there.
Right.
And the Aboriginals from their time will do their best to make sure that the earth is okay until they come to it.
Yeah. Well, I would figure they were like protecting the land in a certain mm-hmm. way, because they did have those markers. And
yeah.
So they were kind of prepared for it. They knew about it. Meanwhile, you have this female geologist running around Australia. Nobody seems to like her, but she seems very pleasant. And she seems...
Well...
They don't give her a backstory, so she seems to be quite happy to leave her time at the end of the movie. And it makes me wonder, like, well, okay, you obviously work for somebody. You got to report to somebody.
Yeah.
You must have family. You're just going to jet off with this stranger who talks really gruff all the time.
Yeah. And she goes for him, like, real quick.
Real quick.
Like, real quick. I mean, it's we've known each other for 10 minutes. Let's skinny dip. It's very odd.
I kept thinking PG-13. They had to get at least the boob shot in. Like, let's earn it.
They did.
We have no swear words.
They did.
We're allowed one F word or a set of boobs. Let's go for the boobs.
Yeah. Well, I felt with Carrie Fisher's outfit, they were like, we're going to have a hint of underboob with that armor.
Yeah.
And that's going to give us that little extra oomph.
Yeah. Carrie Fisher was actually meant to be the female lead. And then the roles got switched. This production was plagued with issues. This was a deal with Hemdel, a production company. It was 11 picture deal, but this was the only one produced in that deal because Hemdel couldn't live up to their they couldn't live up to their obligations financially, and they were making last minute notes. 8 weeks before shooting, Hemdel presented rewrites to the director Brian Hannett. The writer John Baxter quit over it. The money wasn't enough for the rewrites. The shooting schedule went from 13 weeks to 9. Then the director left during post-production, basically one foot out the door before they fired him anyway. The final film had little resemblance to the original script. Hemdel's, this was like the only movie out of the 11 picture deal. Hemdale did not have the money to meet even pre-sale obligations and reduced the pre-sale obligations to $2 million and still had problems raising the money. So this movie had terrible distribution because Hemdale was a useless company. They bit off way more than they could
chew. They had big dreams, but like an 11-picture deal. I mean, really, you got to have something pretty solid. But I'm curious about the rewrites, because that kind of could explain the mess.
Yeah. I get the feeling there was more meant to be like this sci-fi drama. I mean, we have that Carrie Fisher's Petra character. And, you know, you've hired Carrie Fisher. She's been doing Star Wars since 77. So, like, she's a known name.
Yeah.
So I don't know why you would hire Carrie Fisher and then not use her. Like, she's at the beginning, she's kind of doe-eyed and lost, and then they send her back in time with your lead named Ballard, the lead character by Tom Burleson. Mm-hmm. And then she goes back in time. She's injured in a fight with the Jendiki before they kind of go off, and then she's just lying in the background for the rest of the movie. And when she finally is healed, she gets crushed by one of the bad guys. Every now and again, she's there. She doesn't sound very injured, but she's just lying on the ground for the whole movie.
Yeah, and they also have this whole thing where it's these armbands that can heal you, and she's super injured, and they seem to work well for everybody else but her.
Yeah. It was like they couldn't afford her, I'm guessing, and so they shot all of her stuff in like a day, and they couldn't do complicated setups, so they just had her lying on the ground and film her death scene and let her go. But I honestly don't understand what was going on with her character and what her purpose was, other than the fact I think they sent her down because with Ballard because she actually understood the timeline, but was useless in helping him.
She was supposed to be the person who understood. Yeah, she understood what the culture was at that time. Like, she'd studied the history of the area. She understood the Aboriginal people there, which would have been interesting if it had been she had gone there before and met them and stayed with them for a little while. And then the city came back, and then she took up with them again.
Yeah, if they had presented her as a history expert rather than a soldier, I think I would have bought more into her character and why Ballard was reluctant to have her along. I mean, she was a new soldier who followed orders, and he was the kind of rogue leader making the decisions on the fly that if command made a bad decision, he just ignored it because it would get his men killed.
Yep, exactly. I think there was some stuff with the bureaucracy of the city that they've gotten bogged down, and that was part of the danger everyone was in because these guys were just trying to be, I'm in charge. And they were willing to kill the city because they wanted to be in charge.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I mean, the bureaucracy within this city seemed competent enough, but you could tell, like, they didn't leave the city either. So, they were making these cold decisions that only somebody with experience outside the city and in battle would be able to make.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think this is a good time to break and run the trailer. We'll be right back with more Time Guardian.
For over 500 years, this city has been your mother. Now the city will be ours. This is not a skirmish. This is a war. We must have the city.
No. Petra's our 20th century expert.
Expert?
It goes, that's from the committee.
I come from the future, from a city that travels in time, and we can choose what time zone we want to appear in. Right now, it should be around the end of the 32nd century. It's coming back in time.
What really happens when the city lands?
There's going to be a battle out there soon.
These Jendiki, are they human?
Only by a stretch of the imagination.
And what about you? Are you human?
Back up the line, they're still discussing that.
Form the triangle. Storm the storm the city. Destroy them all.
Time Guardian. Starring Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia in Star Wars.
Just so we understand each other, mister, the moment that circuit closes, I'm in charge.
The hell you are.
Dean Stockwell.
You've been given a job to do, Smith. Now do it.
And Tom Berlinson as the Time Guardian.
Now listen, if we don't break through, we're all dead. Let's get these tin cans. Go, go!
Time Guardian. Things are going to get pretty ugly in the year 4039.
That was the trailer for The Time Guardian from 1987 with a screenplay by director and screenwriter Brian Hannett. And this was actually his last film as a director, but he is probably most famous as one of the writers for Mad Max 2 Road Warrior.
And that's an awesome movie.
It is. The screenplay is by John Baxter. The stars Tom Burleson as Ballard. And he was in The Man from Snowy River, parts 1 and 2, and episode 202 when we talked about Flesh Plus Blood.
Oh, I didn't realize he was in that one.
Yeah. Nikki Cohill was Annie, and she's most famous for being in the Australian television show Neighbours.
Oh, yeah. Neighbours.
Yeah. Long-running show.
Long-running soap opera, kind of.
So, okay, soap opera.
Anybody who's anyone in Australia starts on Neighbours.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Kylie Minogue, Chris Hemsworth. Yeah.
Okay. So that's like our General Hospital. And
people start in Degrassi and then go into bigger, better things.
Okay.
In Australia, it's Neighbours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dean Stockwell is Boss. And he's most known for being, was it Al in Quantum Leap? The original series, not the new one. He's passed on now. I mean, he was also in Dune, the original Dune.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that in so long. It kind of makes me nauseous, so that's why I don't watch old Dune.
That's right. Carrie Fisher is Petra. We've only talked about her in our Star Wars episodes, which was episode 23, 123, and 223. Peter Merrill is Zurich. He is the chief bad guy, and he was in Full Metal Jacket. Tim Robertson is Sergeant McCarthy. Okay. He was also in Neighbours and The Cars That Ate Paris.
Yes. Isn't The Cars That Ate Paris a Peter Jackson movie?
No, I don't think so. I don't believe so. I'd have to look into that, but I don't think so. I think that movie is from this.
Yeah.
I want to say it's from the 70s, but don't quote me on that.
Okay, yeah.
Jim Holt was Rafferty, and he was in Crocodile Dundee 2, Rafferty being the deputy cop that was quite the smarmy asshole that got taken off.
He was a dick.
Yeah, and he got taken off the board real easily. Like, he stole that piece of the time thing, and it created a small portal, reached in, grabbed like this laser pistol, and then he got pulled into the portal. And that's the last we see of him. And I'm like, you know, it would have been cool if he'd pulled out that gun. And then had the gun, like had this powerful new weapon.
Yeah. Or if he was pulled in, you see him later in the final battle.
Yeah. As this transformed into a Jendiki.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was just missed opportunities there with that character. Like, you don't take the biggest asshole in the movie off the board and the hero had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. There's got to be something. And having that gun just be out there in the world, that's a super amount of jeopardy that could have been really well used.
Right? Thai Lu Wan was Sun Hwa. This was his last movie, and he really only had done like a couple of TV episodes. But I thought he was actually quite good for what little time he was in it.
Good.
This very lovable engineer type guy. And I liked that they had, I mean, he was almost a stereotype Asian, but I liked that they had an Asian character in there, and we had an American, we had Australians, and you start realizing that this city's made up of the last survivors of humanity. And I think that's kind of important to have a mix of regions and races and religions within the city structure, because it's all that's left.
Absolutely.
Damon Sanders is Smith. He was in a TV show called 1915. Tom Carpenny was a tracker, and that was his only role in this movie. Henry Salter was Prenzler. He was in a TV show, The New Adventures of Black Beauty. Yeah. Peter Healy was Wayne. He was in something called Captain Jono. Adrian Shirley was...
That's Australian.
Oh, yeah. Captain Jono. Yeah, that sounds totally Australian.
Jono.
Yeah. Adrian Shirley is Conahan and was in Fair Game. Terrence Crawford is Tucker. He was in Boys and Trees and The Babadook. And finally, Michelle or Mikhail Reed was Snowy and was in Midnight Spores. And that was the only other role. So lots of new talent in this movie.
Well, I mean, we talked about budgetary reasons, so new talent.
Yeah.
Cheap.
Keeps it down, keeps it local. Yeah, interesting that the lead was switched from Carrie Fisher to Nikki Cohill, but she did a fine job for coming from Neighbors, not quite having the history of Carrie Fisher, but this is also 86. Carrie Fisher might have been loaded the whole time. Maybe there's a reason she was laying down. Too stoned, too high, too drunk to get up.
Maybe, or yeah. Or maybe she just did that because she was going to be laying down.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure why they switched the roles, because obviously if you're
looking, it's a chicken and egg scenario.
Yeah, she's clearly in this movie for American distribution only. That's why she's in this movie. She's the name that gets this movie sold. Her and Dean Stockwell. That's the one that gets this movie outside of Australia.
Exactly. Which made me kind of wonder, too, when you're talking about the changing of the roles with like a 10-picture deal, 11-picture deal.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me they were going to make more of these and more background. Like, this was going to be your initial movie, and then there was going to be more happening.
Oh, well, yeah. I think that there was definitely a sequel in mind somewhere. And yeah. I mean, obviously, this didn't go anywhere. The 11-picture deal was with Hemdale. It wasn't specifically to do 11 pictures based on this movie. It was just...
But I'm saying one of those other ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure that they had high hopes because everybody was trying to be the next Star Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be the next Star Wars if you're...
Casting moving, from Star Wars.
Yeah, if you're moving sand around in a quarry with your lead Carrie Fisher lying on the ground the whole movie. But
yeah, it's like they went, you know what we need? More Tatooine. That's what we need. The whole movie with Tatooine.
The whole movie needs to be Tatooine.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I love the idea of a city moving through time and trying to stay alive that way, but they can defend themselves, but they keep losing resources and people. And by moving through time, it grants them, well, time. And time to plan, yeah. Time to gather more resources and make repairs. And part of what motivates them sending Ballard back in time to do the excavation is they needed to move the city, but during the last attack, one of the city legs was destroyed and was going to be a 6 weeks worth of work, but they needed to move the city. So he had to build something to prop it up.
Yeah. It makes sense
mm-hmm.
in a way. It just doesn't add to a lot of actiony movie stuff.
No. I mean, for a guy that comes off as a soldier, I mean, if you presented him as part of his history was construction or excavation before he became a soldier, then it would make some sort of sense. And I don't recall them saying that. Maybe it did. I don't know. I mean, I've seen this movie twice and I didn't pick up on it either time now.
Yeah. I think what they did, and they just didn't do it very well, is it who the Asian character, I can't remember his name again.
Oh,
he was sort of a father figure to
him. Thai Luan.
Luan. And I think it was sort of they were intimating that because Thai Luan had basically raised knowledge about engineering and how the city worked, because they talk about Thai Luan as knowing how everything in that entire city worked, because he was there when they started building it and he knew all the old stuff and all the new stuff. I think they were trying to say that that's what was happening, but they didn't really do it that well.
No, I don't think they did. Yeah, I would have actually liked to have seen some kind of flashbacks of him raising this kid and teaching him engineering. And like this city is training the youth born in the city to be soldiers, to be engineers, to be all these things because the population is low and the new children being born in it need to know everything. Yeah. They need to know how to run the city. They need to know how to defend it. They need to know all of it to keep it running because they're going to be losing soldiers along the way and people with this knowledge. So everybody needs to have this knowledge.
Yeah. You know what this made me think of when I was watching it was Logan's Run. When we were talking about how the people only lived till 30 and they weren't trained in how that city worked. Mm-hmm. And they weren't doing anything. And I'm like, that was the exact wrong thing to do. The city should be doing the opposite.
Yeah. And it does make me wonder, this is the far future, and their reliance on human beings to keep it running rather than technology. Now, we're seeing technology running rampant with the bad guys. And one thing can motivate why they are keeping it a little lower tech and not using as many high-tech computers or AI, because AI is the thing they're fighting.
And and they've had a few times where the other people are invading them, but like through Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or anything like that, they're contacting these robots, and that's why they decided not to go that way.
Mm-hmm. And that would be interesting, like their failed attempt to follow them back in time. And if they use that cop, like who steals the gun from the portal, if they infect him with microtechnology, right? Like nanotech that infects him to become their soldier or their guy back in time, because there's plenty of technology, especially if you move it to the present, then you have Wi-Fi and all that stuff. And they have an opportunity to spread their technology globally and start producing the nanotech in the past. So this genocide that can happen in real time in the past, now you have an actual threat other than, weird looking bad guys are coming. You know,
This could also explain why they're going to this teeny tiny place in the middle of nowhere in Australia. Because in some of the kind of the small one horse towns in there, they don't have the fiber optic cable. They don't have all this other stuff. Like the infrastructure isn't there because it's not money conscious to do. It would be also why the city wants to go to the small town in the middle of nowhere, because the internet infrastructure, the Wi-Fi infrastructure isn't honestly as huge as it would be in a big city. So they can't infect as much, which is why the city decides to go to this particular area of Australia.
Because of the isolation.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess it gives them an opportunity to contain anything as well. And that's kind of important. But one of the big changes here, they do need to prep for the arrival of the city. But I don't want to take Petra off the table either. Like if she's an expert in the time and a scientist, like we need to keep her active. And now with all of this, we have an idea of, okay, they can still infect people and she'll be able to see the signs. It gives her something else to do. You know, we've got big brass soldier and grunting a lot, but she's the smart one. I'm not sure how we use Annie. Nikki Cohill. But if she's a geologist, it would make sense that she could help him prepare for the arrival of the city and whether the area the city's going to arrive in is structurally sound enough in the first place. You know, that's her job. We never actually see her do that and say any of those things that mark her as a geologist.
Yeah, like I want her to be, I think they kind of say she's out there looking for basically what people would do here in Alberta is look for like stuff to indicate that there's oil under the ground. But for her, they would use her how it would be. She could see the rock formations, what sort of rocks are in there. Is it coal? Is it anything like that? And then that could be, she could look at the plans of the city and go like this area, this valley can support this level of weight.
Yeah, and not just the support the weight of the city, but is there enough there to give it energy? Like, where traveling through time must be an immense amount of energy and technology, but at the same time, they're not using AI tech. They're using a little bit older computers to make their calculations and things like that. But the power source as well, what's the power source and what fuels it? And maybe this region is also rich in that. Yeah. And that is where she can kind of come in and say, hey, this whatever is plentiful in this region.
Yeah, there's ore in the area. And plus, I mean, it is a fine area where she could say, if you have any solar panels, you can probably use the solar out here to help you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It could work.
Yeah. Very sunny region, that the natural abilities of the power. Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. It'd be like solar energy within the city, although their future looked very dark, like all the time.
Yeah. Oh, I know. But that would be why where they'd come in and she'd be like, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
And she could find like maybe a place that is solar. There could be on our farm, maybe, and she's like, we'll just help you get some of this power from the solar farm. It's slightly illegal, but I'll help you.
Yeah, well, I like the idea of them kind of doing some underhanded stuff to get the job done. Ballard didn't care.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, what are they going to do? The people would try to arrest him. Is like, there's no record of you. Yeah, I haven't been born yet.
I won't be like 1,500 years.
Exactly. You could have that little interaction where he's like, where'd you come from? And he's like, well, many, many years in the future. I ain't been born. My parents have never met. My parents haven't been born. It's making the cops look dumb.
Well, yeah, he just speaks what is normal for him. And yeah, the cops in this weird small town that you just have to drive through it and they're suspicious. Like, I know.
What is that?
They're pretty dodgy. I don't like you.
Yeah.
What? You don't like the hot blonde? What's wrong with you?
Right?
Oh, I liked that. When the energy signature of the city, like as it's powering up, causes disturbances within the local area.
Yeah.
When that one cop was taking a piss and it was freezing the air, or at least we're supposed to think it's freezing the air because it froze a Coca-Cola, but for some reason, bare skin.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know, right?
It freezed his pee. At least we're under the assumption it freezes his pee based on his reaction. That was my assumption. Like suddenly his stream froze in his dick.
It would be like if you went to pee outside today.
Yes. It is super cold here in Alberta right now. So you may be hearing my furnace kicking off. But yeah, it is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you peed outside, it would probably freeze right up.
Yeah. Minus 30 something, but feels like minus 47, minus 48, which is fun cold.
Yeah. That's Celsius for you Americans who are backwards using Fahrenheit.
Yeah. But minus 40 is where they cross paths. Minus 40 in Celsius is the same as in Fahrenheit.
All right. So minus 40 Fahrenheit. Also fucking cold. Yep.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Super, super cold right here.
Yeah. Well, this made me think of too, when there's that signature and the two guys are talking and they're like, oh, that's happening again. Because they have been here before. I think Petra should know the people when they come to greet, because it seems like she does know them when they first get there.
At least they do seem to be aware that some of the older population have encountered the city before. And that would be interesting if we could explore some of that in flashback. Because this movie's barely an hour and a half. It's just under. And there's a lot of wasted time with construction and stuff. Like, that might as well intimate at what he's doing and use the opportunity to tell the backstory instead. That's a much richer territory.
Yeah.
And
oh, exactly.
Yeah, and then you're introduced to these characters, who they were and who they are now, why they know things. Like that old prospector, he knew. And then we don't really see him again.
Yeah.
And it was always the older locals, and especially the Aboriginal people.
It just made me think of something that would be kind of funny. I don't know if it would work. Whereas Petra was there before, yes, but the prospector and the other guy, they got really old. But for Petra, it's only been like 10 years, but for them, it's been like 30. And she sees them, she's like, oh, you got old.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, those little things of quirks in time. I absolutely like that stuff. Yeah. As somebody who watches a lot of Doctor Who. Like,
yep.
All this wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. Oh, I'm all for it.
Oh, for sure. Lean into it. If we're going to have a city that travels through time, let's just lean the hell into it.
Yeah. No, I love that. And we should see these characters often as supporting characters. Oh, this sounds like
I did. So with the geologist, the reason she's there is there's a very unusual rock formation in that area that doesn't seem to make sense geologically. But it was left over from when the city was there last time, which is why she's there.
Ah, okay. I like that.
There
that
we go. Makes then more she has sense. Her purpose, and it makes more sense. She knows.
Yeah, and that makes sense why they would cross paths.
And also, she might want to go with him because she's like, "Oh, I've been studying this for a long time. I want to know what happens." So
yeah,
I'm in.
Yeah, and maybe that's why some of the townsfolk are giving her the cold shoulders. She's looking into something that's supposed to be a secret. But that wouldn't make sense if it was the cops doing it and then they don't know the secret. It'd have to be the other townsfolk.
Yeah.
So you'd have to kind of actually switch it out. And then it would be the cops kind of reacting to the rest of the town. I mean, this town just doesn't like outsiders because of the secrets it holds.
Oh, that would be interesting. Oh, I like that. I like that flip. I like that flip where the cops are like, no idea why these people are so mean to you.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it makes it more sense, too, that he has training the backhoe when she shows up because they're like, argh. And the cops might be kind of like, why are you being such a dick?
Yeah. And I would.
And then you do away with a really pervy cop who tries to really grope her at the middle of it. We don't need that.
No, we don't need that, especially when he seemed to not be interested in the beginning. Like everybody else was, but he didn't. He just wanted to get her the fuck out. And
right?
Her arrival has happened to be at the same time as one of these weird environmental anomalies were happening. And it's like, why was he blaming her for, because he got ice pee?
Yeah.
Like
and I mean, honestly, he was just such a woman who can do that.
Yeah.
You maybe run the other way. Don't get pissy with her, because if she can do that, be careful.
Right?
Right.
Although I kept wondering, like, okay, if it got that cold, why is nobody acting cold? Why are we not seeing people's breath? I mean, granted, budget. But these are the little things I would add in, like the cold breath, maybe some snow, like just completely weird weather and sudden cold in an environment that doesn't usually have it.
Yeah. And then you could have like, again, why the cops are wondering why people are acting weird. There's a tiny investigation where they're like, why is this happening? And the cops could be going like, snow has never happened here. What the hell is going on? This is very odd.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have to be all that antagonistic until, like, we can have maybe the dick deputy, but we know what we're going to do with him now. We're going to infect him with some nanotech, and he gets controlled by the Jindiki AI.
And, exactly.
Yeah, he becomes their conduit to try to take over the past by spreading the nanotech into the technology. But thankfully, the isolation of this town is making that difficult because it's lower tech than the rest of the world. It's just, you know, there's some of these small times kind of, there's small towns, sorry, live in the past and take time to catch up to the present.
Well, even in Canada, I mean, I remember going up to places like High Level and up there. Tiny, tiny town in like northern Alberta. And I mean, you'd have satellite internet that takes fucking forever. And it's just, you have kind of local internet, but it's not as huge.
Yeah. So it's those kind of things that they can utilize. You know, there'd probably be enough technology so we have a good action sequence at the end that they could blow up.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever, right? we kind of need that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it only conquers the immediate threat unless they can send a bomb through the portal on the other side, which might be a plan.
It might be, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Like you could have it too where they might have a double cross where they say they're kind of powering up the whole city, but they're actually just powering up a bomb for part of it. That's what a lot of that power is going to, so they can put it through the portal because they know the Jindiki are following them.
Yeah, they're following that energy signature. This
is a Hail Mary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a thought there too. Okay. That would make a pretty good climactic scene, actually.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, by doing what we're planning, we're keeping this isolated to one film, and I'm fine with that.
Oh, absolutely.
But, I mean,
we do not need a sequel to this.
No, but at the same time, there's enough richness in the idea that you could probably have done it like a TV series or whatever, so you could start...
Oh, absolutely.
Looking into the background of the city, and you can literally each season you can tell like the history of the city with different characters. It would be pretty interesting, but we'll keep it isolated in this one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, you could have it where it was like the city first started, but that's like a TV series.
Yeah.
That's something different.
Yeah.
We'll just cast everybody from Neighbors, and then we'll be good.
Right. We all know that nothing but superstars comes from Neighbors.
Yeah, it's amazing. Guy Pearce, I think, was also in Neighbors.
Oh, like, goodness.
Just everybody and their dog was in Neighbors. It's incredible.
Yeah, it seems to be this show that's good luck.
Yeah, yeah. You get on Neighbors, you're going to go somewhere.
That's right. Okay, well, do we have any more ideas we need to add to this to kind of round out our movie before we get into casting?
You know, I think we can lower the bureaucracy scenes maybe a little bit and just concentrate on the people.
Yeah, you know, Earth what
more
the, or? Yeah, the Dean Stockwell stuff, talking to some guy in a chair, like none of it made sense. It didn't mean anything to me. Yeah. the outfits in this movie were awful. Like from this the soldier outfits with these big spikes or fins on their shoulders. I mean, I'm guessing that just blocks an attack, but it also seems like a horrible blind spot. Like, none of it. Yeah. The designs.
They're beautifully ridiculous.
They are. And, like, it feels like Dean Stockwell's was some warehouse find from the 50s, from some 50s sci-fi movie. Like.
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh my God, this is 1986, but most of the costumes look like they're from 1956.
Yeah. But you know what's really funny, and this occurred to me only because I was like browsing online, Petra's like silver cover shield, front shield.
Yeah.
It looks exactly what Jennifer Lopez wore to an event very few weeks ago.
Oh, really? She saw this movie.
Almost exactly. I'm wondering, because I'm going like, oh my God, I can't believe that came into fiction.
They 3D printed their bodice.
They did. Like just over the boobs, a hint of under boob, exact same thing.
Right. You were mentioning 3D printing organs and stuff, and I kind of like the idea of maybe that's how they repair their soldiers.
But I think they do. Because, I mean, if they're getting rid of the humans, then they don't need them. But if they do need human organs and they need humans, then that wouldn't work. But no. If they didn't need them at all,
yeah,
there you go.
But I can see how that would maintain a population as well as long as possible, that repairing soldiers and putting them back into the field.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was an interesting idea. All right.
It's coming again, ain't it, mate?
This time, Jake, keep your bloody mouth shut.
Let's get into some casting here. We were originally going to record this before the holidays, and then I caught the flu. So I had watched this movie, hopped up on the flu and flu medicine and just not feeling great. So, but I did all my homework back then, and then now it's, as we record this, January 13th. So I'm looking back on my notes, and it'll be interesting to like, why did I cast that person? I don't know.
So, you know what? This is the type of movie you should probably watch heavily medicated. It's much more fun that way.
It probably is. I think I did have more fun when I was heavily medicated. Drugs make this movie better.
Yeah, dude. I'm not going to lie. There's some movies out there that are just better with drugs. They just are.
I mean, it couldn't be any worse. Right?
Shall I set us off?
No, or... you know what? I'll let you go last because I want you to be able to react to my my flu decisions.
Awesome.
Okay. So for Ballard, I went with Luke Bracey from G.I. Joe Retaliation. He played Cobra Commander. And your favorite remake, Point Break.
Oh. Okay. You know what? It's weird because if he played Cobra Commander, I'm actually fine with that more than Point Break. So that's good.
I know. For Annie, I went with Mia Wasikowska from Crimson Peak and Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I thought about her too.
Did you?
That's kind of wild that we went. She came across, but I didn't do it.
I've never used her before, so I thought, hey, you know, what a good lead actress that I don't think gets enough recognition. Obviously, she's getting good parts, but I don't think she quite gets the recognition for them.
Yeah.
For Boss.
Yeah, Stoker is amazing.
Right. For Boss, the Dean Stockwell character, I went with Ian McShane from the John Wick movies.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
That's what I did on New Year's is I watched John Wick 4.
Oh, nice. That's quite good. For Petra, the Carrie Fisher part, I went with Chloe Bennett from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She played Daisy / Sky. She was also in the Valley Girl remake.
Oh, nice.
So based on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we know she can do some action stuff. I like her presence. She's got that Asian blood in her, that so she's got this kind of ethnic look, but in a society that's been integrated into one city, that kind of mixed look obviously makes a lot of sense. For Sergeant McCarthy, I went with John Jarrett, one of our favorites from Australia. We've had the pleasure of meeting him, and he is wonderful. If you don't know his work, check out Wolf Creek, and he's also worked in Tarantino, couple of the two Westerns he did. He was in both of them.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say Neighbors.
I'm sure he was in Neighbors. Who wasn't in Neighbors? I think I was in Neighbors. I don't even remember it, but I'm sure I was. I think when I first met you, you showed me Neighbors. I don't know.
Yeah.
I seem to remember watching some Neighbors. Ben O'Toole, I cast as Rafferty. You might remember him as the lead from Bloody Hell, and he was also in Hacksaw Ridge.
Nice.
And I kind of like his look when you think about it. I mean, even though I've seen him more as positive leads, he could do smarmy and gross really well if he wanted to.
Yes.
I mean, you can kind of see that in Bloody Hell, to be honest.
You really can.
Yeah. For Sun Hwa, Ki Ho Kwan. I mean, that's basically his character in Loki.
There you go.
Yeah. And for Zurich, I thought, we only really need a voice because the bad guys are mainly special effects at this point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I went with Hugo Weaving. Because
you know what? Yeah, I was
the voice.
When you did more casting than I did. And when you were talking about Zurich, I'm like, oh, God, who would I put in Zurich? Hugo Weaving. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. And
how weird is that?
Yeah. And I do have a handful of actors here from Australia. I kind of wanted to keep that Australian connection as well. And my director is the director of Bloody Hell, Alistair Grierson. I think that movie's wonderful. Everybody should watch that. That's a gem of a horror movie you can see on Shudder right now. And I think he could probably take the weirdness of this and do something with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Bloody Hell was a surprising gem. When I was like, I got to see this. And then it just blew my mind. It was great.
Yeah, it's way better than you expect it to be.
Ah, I love the movies when you're like, wow, you are way better than you had any right to be. And I'm here for it.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's get to your cast now. What do you got?
I didn't cast as many people as you.
Yeah, I did actually.
I went for Ballard.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't. I actually, most of that was done during my flu thing, and except for the director. I had forgotten my director, so I did that one yesterday, and it popped in my head. But I had forgotten I had cast somebody from Bloody Hell. It all kind of worked out.
There you go. See, Drugged You is really on – Drugged You is there helping you. Just behind the scenes.
Yep. Yeah. My brain doesn't stop working regardless of whether I'm drugged up or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then maybe you'd be an awesome spy because they give you truth serum and you'd be like, I'm just doing stuff.
Yeah, that's right. It's never going to work.
Exactly.
I make up shit for a living.
There you go.
Exactly.
You can make it feel true. That's all you know.
Yeah. No, I make up shit as a hobby. I don't make anything on this as a living.
You could if you wanted to.
I suppose
we both could if we wanted to.
That's
we just
true.
Haven't found the time.
Well,
we will.
We might find some time. All right.
We might find some time.
Yeah. What do you got for your casting?
Okay, for my Ballard, I went with KJ Apa of Riverdale.
Okay, who did he play?
He was Archie.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen the show, so
he doesn't normally have red hair, but he is, I think he's part Maori, and he's New Zealand, I think.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that would be nice. Yeah. For Annie, I went with Rose McIver from iZombie.
Oh, nice.
Because she's also, I think, Australian or New Zealand.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome. And then for Boss, I went with Jemaine Clement because I just want to feel that energy there.
Okay.
For my Petra, I went Lucy Lawless.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, yeah.
I feel that, it.
That's who would nail it. And for Sergeant McCarthy, I went with Martin Henderson from X.
Okay.
The horror movie X, where he was the boyfriend slash producer slash guy.
Okay.
He's in his underwear for part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. And then for my direct, I have various townspeople, but I didn't know who, but I'm like, yeah, we're doing local talent. So that'll be filled in.
Yeah.
And for my director, I went with Taika Waititi. That's definitely a New Zealand Australian director. We could do that.
Nice. I like your casting. Good start to the year for that.
Thank you. Yours too. I loved it. When you said Hugo Weaving is Zurich, I'm like, he's just got that voice. Love Hugo Weaving.
Right?
He's got to do audiobooks.
This movie has a whopping 4.3 out of 10 on IMDb. The Rotten Tomatoes score, there All is right. not enough critics to review this. So there's no actual critics score. So you only have to guess the audience score.
Okay. Audience score, 43.
Subtract 30.
Oh God, 13?
Mm-hmm.
I was actually going to go with like 27, and I thought that just seems mean. I guess I wasn't wrong.
Nope, they are far meaner than you. The audience sucks. They did not like this movie, but I'm guessing the five people that bothered to review it didn't like it. I didn't see how many birdie reviewed it, but it's probably not very many.
Yeah, sometimes it's just the only people who review it are hate watchers, and it's not a good balance.
Yeah. Apparently this movie had a budget of $8 million in Australian money, which is about the equivalent of Canadian mm-hmm. cash. I think we're about on par with them. And
yeah, I think we are now.
Yeah, I don't know how it did abroad. It had very little presence in U.S. and Canada. The gross for U.S. and Canada is $12,500.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think Hamdale was broke before they made this movie?
Holy crap. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of tells the tale there, doesn't it? Yeah, so I think that's it for the Time Guardian, but yeah, we always like to start off the new year with a sci-fi movie, and this one was just as cheesy as some of the ones we've done in the past.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, that's the whole thing. There is a nugget of something here that's enjoyable.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
Yeah, that's what we're always looking for, that nugget of an idea that can be blossom into something great. I would love to get kind of my hands on the original script and see what this could have been without the studio interference.
Right.
Yeah, I feel.
And there's so many ways to do this too.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the writer and the director because it pretty much derailed a career that had barely got started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
That's not great.
No. It's taking talents out of the pool that left the industry because of bad experiences.
Yeah, and bad management.
Yeah.
That's the thing. There's so much bad management out there, and you're like, what have we missed? What joy have we missed out on because of bad management?
Yeah. Well, we did have an announcement to make that we hinted at the beginning of the episode. We're still going to be making this show for season 10, but we're going to be releasing on a reduced schedule. As I've been talking to people over the past couple of years, one of the things I hear the most about is 400 episodes is kind of daunting and they're falling behind. And another reason for that decision of we want to reduce the schedule and release the show every 2 weeks instead of weekly.
Yeah.
It's because I've been basically sacrificing my weekends to get this show out. And I haven't had a really decent weekend outside of the holidays for over 8 years. And I kind of want to get
some... your life back.
Man. Yeah. So I work during the week and then I do this on the weekends. And I kind of want to have the opportunity to, you know, go on vacations and just do things again on weekends. Yeah. So every other weekend we'll release the show. We're going to pile some stuff up and make sure the show gets still released on a bi-weekly schedule. So you won't get 50 episodes this year. You'll get 25. But doesn't mean we might not slip in a special here and there. We're still going to do 31 Days of Horror. Like this, we're still going to do everything we did before, just a little less of it. And hopefully.
And I mean, if something big happens.
Yeah, we'll be on top specials. Of it. Yeah, we'll be on top of it. It doesn't mean it's going to be mostly a bi-weekly schedule, but there might be times where you'll get consecutive episodes each week. It's going to just be dictated by life and how things work and what we want to do.
After so many years, did you ever think our biggest problem would be being too prolific?
Yeah, it's weird when I'm constantly hearing like, oh, I'm behind, but like, okay, you know what? We'll give you the opportunity to catch up this year. And, slow things down, 400 episodes. I get it. That's a lot of episodes when I think about it. I'm like, oh, we did that. We did that.
We did that.
Yeah.
I think, Jay, you've done too good of a job.
Well, I put my mind to something and I stick to it. But I think it's time to slow down a little bit, let life catch back up. And as we talk about like wanting to do things, like I want to take the opportunity to maybe write some of my own scripts and throw them out there. And I was even running the idea of doing a book based on the show, writing a book based on the show and putting that out there.
Awesome.
But, these things take time. And if you're working a full-time job and then coming home and then your weekends are filled up with this, you've only got a few 2-3 hours of lounge time during the weekdays. And then I'm producing the show. So I need to free up some time somewhere to make some of that stuff happen and find other things to do. So we've been pitching movies for 8 years. It might be time to put up or shut up.
Well,
I kind of want to do that.
Yeah, because I do have to start doing that. I actually bought special software that helps you figure it out. So I may be bugging you for help.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, no, at this point, we should be talking heads. I want us to be talking heads on In Search of Darkness. I'm putting that out there. In Search of Anything, those documentaries, we should be talking heads. We're very good.
I did suggest to them, I'm like, hey, you're heading in the 90s. You're starting to head into our territories on your next go round.
Exactly.
A lot of horror remakes were happening and we've covered a lot of it.
Yeah, we were there. We were in the trenches the first time. The second time, we're there.
That's right. So, we're going to take the opportunity to kind of do what people do on weekends. But we'll get this show out to every 2 weeks now instead of every week, but that's okay. You know, less is more. Hopefully you'll get caught up and you'll yearn for more. Keep sending us your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments. We like seeing them. If there's a fan challenge you have, please let us know on our social media or through our email. At Invasion Remake on Twitter X, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We're occasionally on Threads as well. You might find us on Blue Sky soon. I did get an invite code. I just haven't set that up yet.
Nice.
And of course, you can email us at invasionoftheremake@gmail.com if you want to send us those suggestions, corrections, and comments. And of course, fan challenges. Fan challenges need to be at least 20 years old. That's kind of our cutoff. Unless you want to suggest a comparison, that's okay too. Help us source it as well. If there's something you want us to cover, it'll up your chances if you can tell us how to find it. If it's on a streaming site or whatever, YouTube, send us a link. It'll definitely help the chances of your episodes getting made. So let us know where to find it as well. And hit up our Tee Public store. You can go to our website, invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast. And over there, there's a button along with our archives. You can click and check out all of our past episodes, 31 Days of Horror and stuff like that. But there's also a store button that'll take you to our Tee Public store where you can get t-shirts, mugs, posters, PPE masks, totes, notebooks, all sorts of cool stuff with our logo on it. So we have tons of different images to choose from. We've got like over 75 designs. Well, actually probably over 100 now with the what Sam did for 31 Days of Horror. So we're probably well over 100 designs now that you can choose from. So click that link, grab yourself something cool, t-shirt. It's cold winter season, hoodies. You totally need a hoodie right now. And we got some cool hoodies over there for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, get yourself something cool. Every little bit helps. And if you continue shopping after using our link, even, you know, with our store, use the link to do your shopping on TeePublic, and we'll get a little kickback even if it's not within our store. So just, you know, shop to your heart's content, and it will help out the show and keep it free for you every other week now.
Yes.
All right. Well, Sam, he will be back. His work schedule's been also complicated since his job changed a little bit. So we'll get him when we can. And that was part of the decision as well, was availability with people as well. But Trish and I will always be here for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully Sam will be back here with 2 weeks. We'll be back with a comparison. And until then, I've been Jason.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Stop the fighting. Stop the fighting now. You can no longer win, Jendiki. Zurik is dead. The war is over. You've tracked us across the centuries to try to destroy us and take what we have. It's the power of this city that you want. Well, I'm here to give it to you. You'll be trapped within its force forever. Here's 500 years of power, all at once.